This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
And this is joy.org.au, or more commonly known as Joy 94.9. Very good morning to you. If you're having a good day, that's wonderful. If you're not, well, you're about to, because we have a wonderful panel here who will cheer up your day. Ariane, Kenton and Elena, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Present.
So we're going to talk about, what was that?
Present.
Present.
Mr. Hood. It's like a bit of a roll call. Why were you late, Kenton Miller? Just take a seat there. Sit down and be quiet. Oh, he's latte. Oh, dear.
That wasn't a pretty sight.
Look, we're going to talk about heterosexuality, privilege and safety, and whether, you know, we choose to hide behind that and when we don't. Because we can walk down the street and look heterosexual, whatever that looks like, and be seemingly heterosexual. And should we or shouldn't we? Or what's good about it? What's not good about it? Who wants to start? You guys can say whatever you like. And I'll turn your microphone off if you go too far. But
I think you should start, Elena, and talk about how it's not possible all the time to walk down the street and pass as heterosexual.
Well, I was actually going to say maybe you should start, Kenton, and or maybe you, Ariane, and maybe we should actually go step back and talk about what heterosexism actually is first.
Good idea.
Before we talk about our community.
Yeah, can I ask you, because you were saying earlier, because we go into training and talk for hours before this starts, that you reckon there's a difference between heterosexism and homophobia. Now, this is a new one for me, so do you want to talk about it?
I do. Actually, I do. God, how rehearsed does that sound? Well, and now that you mention it. Well, okay. Well, my understanding of heterosexism is basically heterosexism is a belief that the dominant norm is exactly that, a hetero view of the world, a hetero paradigm in which you have male positioned against female, as in the genders. And what happens there is that everything else is other. So any other form of sexual identity or expression fits outside of heterosexism is not right, not normal.
Now, can I just say, if I hadn't gone to university and swallowed a postmodernist dictionary, what would that actually look like in my life?
Well, it's the mummy and daddy, and the mummy and daddy that make babies. And that's a very important thing of heterosexist or heterosexism culture, because it means that you have a male that can reproduce. Well, contribute to reproduction, thank you, and you have a female that can reproduce. So therefore the entire institution is built up around the concept that this is what's normal, and because the world is set up or should be set up according to that, anything that doesn't fit into that ends up being deviant, ends up being misunderstood or just doesn't fit in that. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean homophobia fits into that, because homophobia, I mean, we could talk about what homophobia is forever, but if we take a really basic fear of, that doesn't necessarily mean a person who is heterosexist or lives in a heterosexist world is automatically a homophobic person. And I think the most basic example is like, well, think of the friends or family members you have around you who you do get along with, who are straight, let's just call heterosexist people straight just now, just for a second, and then go, well, they don't actually hate gays or queers or whatever. They don't. Kenton, stop raising your eyebrow at me. But I'm talking about the ones in our world that we actually do believe that they're not, well, we don't believe, or they themselves say they're not homophobic, and they don't do anything actively for us to say, hey, you heterosexist person or you straight person, you are homophobic. Mm. So there is, I believe, a line between heterosexism and homophobia. That's not to say it's exclusive, because you can have homophobic heterosexist people, but it isn't the same thing.
And there are also people that aren't homosexual that don't fit into a heterosexual mould. So single people who choose not to be in heterosexual relationships or have children can be as outside, I guess, of that model. And I know a lot of my friends who've decided not to have children, they're straight women, have copped a lot of flack from their sort of partnered, you know, mothering friends or whatever. Like, how dare you not want to have children? So is that the sort of along the lines too? So that's got nothing to do with homophobia per se.
Yeah, I guess, but my take on it is, having run challenging homophobia training for years with police, with mainstream organisations, if I had a dollar for every time I heard the phrase, I'm not homophobic, but, And sorry, but yeah, there's just degrees of it. And even if you're not actively homophobic, that heterosexism means you benefit from the world, which deprivileges us.
Yeah,
so many syllables in one word.
Well, I don't disagree with that. Just on the single women point, just, and that ties into your point as well, Kenton. Look, if you live in a heterosexist world which privileges male and female, or man and woman, let's go with man and woman, you do automatically also within that world privilege man above woman as well. So if you're going to privilege man before woman, then woman who decides she does not need or want man is going to also fall out of that position of power. And that's the institutions that we have around us, our legal, economic, social, cultural institutions. They're all based predominantly on male first, so they're all patriarchal, in other words. And yes, I was going to throw that word in sometime during today. having said that, if you're basically, and this is where you use the word privilege, I think the problem that we have is most people don't challenge their own position in society, be they, well, if they're heterosexual, they don't see any need to challenge it. And we were having a bit of a chat on how, you know, earlier as we were doing our hours of preparation, that, well, it's like racism as well. People don't challenge themselves as to why they say certain things, why they behave in certain ways. And that's the thing with heterosexism as well, that it's a position of privilege, it's a position of power, and unless people challenge themselves...
So if you've got that position of privilege and power, why would you want to challenge yourself? I mean, I would want to challenge a whole lot of beliefs that I have because I'm interested in my own growth and development and all of that kind of stuff, and a lot of people are. But if you're not focused on that so much, why would you want to challenge those kinds of isms, if you like, in your own life?
Don't all look at me. Just because I haven't said anything yet. It's interesting. I find it difficult when I talk about... is that better? That's probably better. When we talk about this from an intellectual level, I'm a psychologist and I like to talk about things from a personal level. And I can think of an instance that I was involved in once where a straight man, father of a groom who was a friend of mine, I was at a wedding and a very butch lesbian who I was with at the time, he challenged himself and his heterosexism, but I don't think he challenged it in a way that he ever expected. He grabbed her breast, so basically sexually assaulted her at this wedding. And
how was that meant to be challenging it?
Well, because he got a right rollicking from me and from, you know, my friend at the time, and yeah, I think that it changed his opinion. I'm hoping that it did, because it certainly changed my opinion on on safety in situations and a whole lot of situations.
Does that sort of beg the question, Arianne, that some people won't even start thinking or challenging themselves until they've actually been confronted by someone who's brought that to their attention?
I think so, yeah.
And how maybe by letting things go, because I was talking earlier on air with Beck about how sometimes we let things go because you just can't be bothered at work. If someone's made a comment or an assumption, you let it go. But there are times that you actually do become, well, just challenge and say, no, my partner's a woman or whatever. And that maybe if we challenge people enough, some people may think about.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, one of the things that I think of too is why is it? I mean, often the people who are doing the challenging of heterosexist society that we live in are people who are on the extreme. So it's very butch dykes, or it's a very, you know, camp guys who are at the forefront of.
She just looked straight at me then.
I did. Wasn't just you.
You butch dyke. You
butch dyke. Yeah.
I've been called that before.
No, that was me.
And that, yeah, and that, you know, do, yeah, they seem to be at the forefront of and taking the full brunt of, people who are trying to challenge.
But that's because there's really limited choice for them. Whereas for lots of our community who might be straight acting lipstick lesbians who might pass, to use the tranny term for it.
Like me.
Yeah. Well, you could easily pass. You would, and these days it's been pointed out more and more, increasingly I pass because I no longer wear my white blonde mohawks or pink or purple coloured hair.
Last time we had the panel, when Ariane and I were walking out of the building, people thought we were a married couple.
Oh, you look so dapper.
So it becomes a choice as to whether or not we actually tell people, whereas for lots of people and for some people in our community, that choice is being taken away and you develop that tough outer shell as a form of resistance. And some of my mates have said, look, I reject them before they reject me. And that's what the pushing them away is all about and everything. But I think that from within our community, there's that privilege of hiding our sexuality that we exploit sometimes. So why?
What do you say a little more about the idea of privilege of hiding our sexuality?
If you go into a workplace and you have the option of telling people or not telling them about the fact that you may be same-sex attracted to some degree, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer and questioning, that you've actually... you can profit from not doing that. And where you profit is where they bring their own baggage from their very limited of exposure and understanding about what fairies or dykes are like and everything.
So can I ask, is there a should in that then, that you should tell? Like, are you... is there something that says... because the other side of the question with that is, well, why is it something that you need to even... let me phrase this. It's not like, why should you tell? It's not about telling or not telling so much, but so why should it be an issue? Why should you even make it an issue?
Because it's never an issue for them. They never shove their sexuality down our throat. We don't live in a world where we swim in heterosexuality everywhere, do we? No.
There's the whole safety argument as well, because I remember when I was a young law student and I was doing a placement on the north coast of New South Wales, in Lismore, no less, and for those who don't know, it is a country town, but it does have its fair bit of queers around. But I was working in the biggest, very white, upper-middle-class law firm, and I remember just basically my supervisor, who was one of the partners, he made my sexuality an issue in that he would say things to me like... because, of course, I was a young law student, he'd be like, oh, come on, how do you know? And, you know, you're too young and your girlfriend's too pretty, she can't be, and you could be saved as well. So
suggesting that lesbians should only be with ugly partners.
Absolutely.
No, that's the thing. Or women are only lesbians because they're too ugly to get a man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's, that's true.
Oh, I've heard that from family. So not true, as evidenced by the gorgeous women who are sitting here.
Absolutely.
Cha-ching. Cha-ching.
Three of them, almost enough to turn Canton and I heterosexual.
Not quite.
But the safety thing was such that I felt scared. Not physically scared. Like, no, he wasn't going to hit me or do something horrible like that. But I did feel threatened that my sexual orientation was okay to discuss. Me, who I am, was all right for this man in a position of power to tell me that I shouldn't be the way I am, and that's a really scary thing for someone. And so when we're talking about heterosexism and privilege and power, well, he felt in his place in the world it was all right
to commentate on that. Yeah.
What would he have done if you commentated on his, I wonder?
We would have probably, and I think this is something that we did have a bit of a chat about earlier. I think he would have found it absolutely great, because he was completely sexualizing me, as a lot of straights do. Like, they sexualize gay men and then they go, ew, gross, or they sexualize women and they go, yeah, hot. And we're talking about men just now. Or women could be doing it the other way around, or the same way. But because they've sexualized us first and then they look at us second as a person, I think he would have loved it if I turned around and commented on him and gone, oh, look, you know, you and your sex life.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible? I mean, I take the point of it comes from that heterosexist. I can hardly say the word.
I can hardly get it out.
What if, like, if he would have loved it? Is there a way that we could love it and make something of people's inquiry about that for us? Kenton's frowning.
Well, I'm just imagining if you're telling us that you get off on straight people getting off with each other. Is that what you're saying?
No.
No, good.
Look, no, I mean, like, to say what I'm saying is, for someone to make an issue of our sexuality, does that have to be a problem?
Well, it depends what they want to do with it. And even in the example that Alina was just talking about, there's the privilege in that is that they get to be the ones who comment on us. And we get that whenever a straight person in our life tells us that they accept us. What happens when we turn around and say, and I accept you for being straight too, I don't have a problem with that. And it's only when they get that reverse that they hear that there is that inherent arrogance within that.
Patronising.
And I know patronising.
Think about the conversations at lunch and think about your work and the people who look the most, you know, visibly the most queer, let's say, and think about the ones who don't look that queer but people still know they're queer. And then, while we're thinking about all of this, inevitably you'll find that the conservative people in your workplace will go and talk to the less, or they see the less threatening or the least threatening looking queer person, and then they will say to them, oh, you know, this is what I did on the weekend and hubby and I and the kids went out here and blah, blah, blah. But they would not ask, what did you do on the weekend? Because they don't want to know, because they'd be just, okay, that's not all right. I can talk to you and I can, as Kenton says, I can tell you all about my world.
See, I take what you're saying, but I've had different experiences. Like, I've worked in very heterosexual, where all the staff were heterosexual except myself, and that wasn't my experience. They were very open about my sexuality and very open. Now, they were all psychologists, so that makes a difference, maybe.
This was in a car factory, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, but I take your point. I'm not disagreeing. I think that's absolutely right.
I actually think this is a wonderful opportunity for us to actually get in and do some social changing, social engineering, if you like. I think I had a similar experience to you, Jeff, where I was working in a completely straight environment. With a group of professionals. It was in the country. And in fact, I'd been working there 8 weeks. I wasn't out to the whole organisation, and there was a big function on for staff and partners. And I just chipped myself, basically thinking, I don't think I'm ready to come out to this whole organisation. Well, as it turned out, the actual second in charge came up to me and said, "So we're hoping to see you and your partner." And I went, oh, yeah, sure.
So these people knew you had a partner but didn't know the gender of your partner?
No, I knew the gender of my partner, knew the name of my partner, the whole thing. It was a small country town. And so it was a terrific opportunity then, and I made some fantastic friends with people who I was the first lesbian they'd ever met. And still have some friendships with people from this country town, and it was a wonderful opportunity to actually do some educating and some broadening of minds and having really open discussions. And the people that I was really impressed with their openness and willingness to have their opinions challenged.
See, I think that's great. And I just got two quick comments, and the first one is though that. In the two personal experiences that we've just heard, then I think it's fantastic that that there've been examples, positive examples. But I actually think that's an incredible amount of pressure on people within the queer community, that we've constantly got this battle that we always have to. We constantly have to educate people by our very existence, by our being. And I think that the problem is that the good examples are far outweighed by the negative examples, which are set up by the society that we live in.
Sure.
If we've got institutions that are against us, that we're still battling for equality in a gazillion different areas of law, well, It's the few examples that are good are going to be few and far between, because how can we have acceptance when we're in a system or a structure where we can have straights turn around and say to us and say, oh, well, and until recently, of course, well, you don't get Medicare rights and health rights, and you still don't have same-sex recognition, you know, at a federal level, and you don't have a raft of other things that do differentiate between your relationship and mine or your existence and mine, therefore I'm okay in being the way I am towards you because you are other. Mm. So I think that that's something that we can't forget, yeah, or we can't get away from. Yeah.
Mm. Look, I was being a bit of a devil's advocate in that, but there is an element of something like in the situations where we don't find that, like the examples that Ariane and I have said about, is there something... Like, I'm wondering about what it is that enables certain workplaces to be less homophobic and others to be more, and whether there's something we can learn from the less homophobic ones that might say something about how we deal with the others.
Well, my challenge for you would be that I think both you and Ariadne, as you've suggested last time as a married couple...
Yes.
Yeah, that you pass as the normal, yeah? And
so, happens in those terms of appearance, you're saying,
yeah,
that, yeah,
or and acceptance and behaviour, and you're not quote unquote outrageous and everything. That part of the challenge is how much do you actually look to those straight people as if you embrace what they regard as the abnormal? Because I think it's like our last conversation around weddings, where I suggested that the lovely Turkish wedding where the acceptance happened was because you completely sold out to their idea of what the wedding should be.
That because that's what I value.
Yeah.
You bought in.
Yeah, but did I buy in? Or, I mean, I don't have a problem with the concept of being a sellout and buying into it. But if it's also something that I enjoy and that I value, then is that... Why does it have to be theirs? Why can't it be mine? Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But then the question is, no matter how we want to live our life, I would defend to the death the right of the drag queen to dress as the drag queen dresses.
Absolutely.
The way the leather queen dresses. Absolutely. They are my tribe, and I love all aspects of it.
Yep.
Annoy the hell out of me sometimes, but they're more family to me than family, often.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, that's a really good point.
Is it also to do with being inclusive and participatory? Like, there are certain workplaces that are inclusive of all difference. So if it's not sort of white, straight, whatever, that they actually realise that there are cultural and religious differences. We were talking earlier with Liz, who did the breakfast show, who said at work they were talking about which pin-up guys were hot, you know, the nurses were sitting around. And she sort of chipped in and said, well, actually, I think, and she mentioned a woman, I think Laura Linney, I find her hot. Now, that actually stopped the conversation, but she's felt ostracised and couldn't participate in the lunch with her colleagues. Mm. But there might be other situations where, say, Jeff's workplace, where you could say that and they'd just go, or even say, you know, Jeff, who do you find hot?
Yeah.
So is it to do with the culture as well of particular work units?
Mm. Definitely. I mean, I've always, because for me, my sexual orientation, my gender identity are very much tied up in all aspects of my behaviour. I've always chosen to be out at every workplace. Mm. And if I don't do it in the job interview, I pretty much do it very, very soon in. And that's just because I don't want to work in a place where I feel I can't put photos up, I can't have a rainbow sticker on my desk, and I can't talk about. And I'm actually one of those people probably that all the straights are going, oh my God, she just won't shut up about her queer life, because I'm yelping about, oh, I did this at Pride and I did this then, and I'm constantly yelling at people about being inclusive and whatnot. And But I've been in those areas where I haven't felt completely safe about it, like in my, as I said, my placement days. And now, though, because I am a lot older, I now have that position where I can move around and I can do, I can pick and choose workplaces a lot more. But what about the younger queers who don't feel safe?
Yeah. You're listening to Ariane, Kenton and Elena on Saturday. Mm.
And I have a problem with that. I think that that's outrageous. I mean, and as we were talking about before, I think that it's for a nightclub to designate their clientele have to dress in a particular way, I think is outrageous. And then I thought, well, hold on, this particular, I think it's, what's it called? There's a femme night happening somewhere in Melbourne. I'm really out of the loop. But this nightclub is, I guess, made explicit what most nightclubs actually have as a tacit understanding, that you have to dress to a particular way. But I think that for women who are not comfortable wearing femme clothes or lipstick, to actually say you have to wear this particular code or style of dress to gain entry into this club, I think that stinks.
So I don't have an issue with that, because to me, I think it's all right to have different... to move along the spectrum, and if there is a particular night that's promoting a particular type of style or dress or whatever, and I'm, you know, perhaps might not be able to to go there because I might not know how to dress a certain way. But I don't actually have an issue with that. What I have more of an issue with is people who potentially use dress or behaviour to move in and out of heterosexual world. That's a bigger issue in my mind, because within the community, I am, within the queer community, I am completely accepting that you can't just say, well, I think all lesbians should all be butch. I think that's just ridiculous. And I wouldn't be happy in a world like that any more than I'd want a world that they'd all be femme. So I actually have more of an interest or more of a frustration when I see, and we'll go with women for a second, when I see femme women being able to get more acceptance in a straight world than, let's say, a butch woman would. And on the other hand, I don't think it's particularly good when a butch woman could get more acceptance, let's say, if she's one of the guys and she can get away with all the sport talk and, you know, drinking.
Doesn't get the sexist comments around sexual sort of
doesn't
stuff.
Doesn't be, and it isn't sexualised, but actually can get maybe even further than the femme woman. So that's actually more of my interest in how aping behaviour for the, In some respect, is I'd say far more of an issue than within.
So, are you talking about like consciously aping behaviour to manipulate a situation, or are you talking about people who?
Sorry to cut you off.
No, go.
Well, both. I mean, I know personally, I'm very comfortable being a tomboyish girl, but I do know that when I'm in a group of, and this is my upbringing, you know, a bunch of guys, I become one of the boys so quickly that I can be far more sexist, far more offensive, far more biggest beer drinker there, and stop nodding everybody in the room.
And, no, I'm agreeing with you. I do the same thing, but I'm femme, so...
But are you saying there's a problem with you doing that?
Well, I think so, because I think I'm aping the behaviour that they are performing, and I'm encouraging that,
but
and I'm accepted
for that.
But
is it your behaviour too? Like, I just want to make the distinction between aping as in doing something that doesn't feel like it's me versus a situation that brings out some aspect of what might be me. Like, that might be a part of you that comes out in that situation. And I think there's a difference between aping a behaviour, which is a kind of a falseness or a fraudulent kind of thing, versus something that might be you. Just a question about that.
But part of it is about the reward you get for it.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
I know that when I was on the phone to my family, and I tend to regress when I'm with my family, and so I get off the phone and I tend to sound a lot more like that. And I was at my workplace and got off the phone and was just talking, and one of the co-workers turned around and said, "Oh, why don't you sound like that all the time? That's so much nicer." And it's like, get her. But that's just it. In some places, to actually speak sibilantly or camp or whatever, you get demerit points.
Yeah, that's true. And that's true.
And you know that. You know what behaviours get rewarded.
Yeah.
Well, it is that. Yeah. It's that whole trying to fit in. And I guess, the use of the word ape is quite volatile, because does it mean that when you are imitating or performing a certain way, will you get, and I love the word reward, will you be rewarded for that behaviour? Mm. And of course you will, because suddenly you're accepted, suddenly you're one of the guys, one of the girls, suddenly you are in that position where you're not other, you are just the same. And by that I mean you have now, you know, that position of privilege or power that you can talk on the same terms. You don't become the person who's on the outside that you know, they're queer, that shouldn't be a part of the group.
I think ape's very appropriate, because doesn't that got to do with evolving into something that they want us to be?
Yeah.
So perhaps it's
I think that's really interesting, because I remember when I first came out, I aped into a butch dyke, because I thought that's what I needed to do to
you
be gorilla'd. Accepted.
You gorilla.
I gorilla'd.
There are quite a few butch dykes out there that look like apes, but I didn't say that on air.
And it was really interesting, because that differentiation between what is something that is a part of, you know, another side to ourselves versus something that is somewhat unnatural, that was so unnatural for me. It was just not who I was. And it was really difficult. But I did it because I thought I would get rewarded by the gay community.
For because looking gay.
Yeah. Exactly. Looking like and getting accepted. And I did.
Which is, again, about not being you. It's about being something else for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I've certainly teased young men who fall into what's Alina's favourite category, twinks, who I've watched come out through a process where I've said they've swallowed gay 101. Right down to must get nipple pierced, must get this haircut, must, you know.
Checklist.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And use the tongue differently.
Well, in the 70s when I came out and I wore makeup and it didn't. I was totally, well, not totally ostracised by a certain group of lesbians because it was sort of feminist, separatist times. I've continued to make my stand because that's, I'm comfortable in how I look and how I present. And, you know, whether that's fed into being more accepted or not, sometimes it's worked in my favour, sometimes not, but it's also to do with how I behave and my demeanour and how I converse with people and how much I disclose and how I look when I go to Bunnings and all that.
It's time to wind up, folks. This discussion could go on for hours. I always find this with our panel discussions. We never get to the end of them, do we?
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.